Today is Friday, October 23rd, and you're listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Jason Patinkin in Washington. Coming up, U.S. President Donald Trump and former Vice President Joe Biden face off in the final presidential debate.
Let's talk about what we're talking about.
Also ahead, a Greek neo-Nazi leader turns himself in to police.
It is a historic decision bound to have ramifications for other far-right parties across Europe.
Plus, we meet the street vendors feeding Thailand's protesters. These stories and more are next. Our top story today is in the U.S., where President Donald Trump and his Democratic Party challenger Joe Biden met in Nashville, Tennessee Thursday night for the final debate of the presidential campaign. VOA's Mike O'Sullivan reports.
The second and final face-off, less than 2 weeks before the election. Trump addressed the first topic, COVID-19.
It's a worldwide pandemic. It's all over the world. You see the spikes in Europe and many other places right now.
Trump says a vaccine may soon be ready. Biden says that's too late for the more than 220,000 Americans who have died.
Anyone who's responsible for that many deaths should not remain as president of the United States of America.
Each man accused the other of corruption, Trump apparently referring to the business dealings in Ukraine and Russia by Biden's son, Hunter.
All of the emails, the horrible emails of the kind of money that you were raking in, you and your family. And Joe, you were vice president when some of this was happening.
Biden denied the allegation.
I have not taken a penny from any foreign source ever in my life. We learned that this president paid 50 times the tax in China, has a secret bank account with China, does business in China.
Trump said the Chinese account was not secret, and he has done business around the world. He denied news reports that he has paid little or no U.S. taxes in recent years.
I prepaid my tax tens of millions of dollars I prepaid.
The debate comes as U.S. security officials warn of foreign attempts at interference in the election, said Biden.
That Russia has been involved, China has been involved to some degree, and now we learn that Iran is involved.
Trump said he has stood up to foreign rivals.
Because there has been nobody tougher than Russia between the sanctions, nobody tougher than me on Russia. Between all of what I've done with NATO, you know, I've got the NATO countries to put up an extra $130 billion going to $420 billion a year. That's to guard against Russia.
Political scientist Jeremy Mayer of George Mason University says both candidates did well, Biden shining at the end of the 90 minutes.
The question near the end where they asked him, what would your message be if you win to the people who didn't vote for you? And it was a unifying message that was against all the polarization and toxicity that we see in our politics.
Mayer said Trump was relentless.
He knew what he wanted to do, which is stain Biden with this alleged scandal involving his son. And he, I think, landed some blows.
With no clear winner, he said the debate is unlikely to change the minds of many voters. Biden leads in the polls, and the race now centers on a handful of battleground states that could decide the election. More than 40 million Americans have already cast their ballots in early voting. Mike O'Sullivan, VOA News, Los Angeles.
Thursday's debate was not chaotic like the first one, but facts took a hit last night, right from the beginning. The Associated Press fact-checking team said that Trump's first line of the night about COVID-19 deaths was false. The AP team said Trump repeatedly misrepresented information about the pandemic, such as insisting that the pandemic is drawing to a close. He also boasted about, quote, clean, end quote, facilities at the border for migrant children, ignoring the filthy conditions under which they were held in 2018. Biden, at times, was selective on the coronavirus and other matters as well, the fact-check team said. At one point, Biden claimed no one under former President Barack Obama's health care plan lost their private health insurance, though millions of people did. Still, Thursday's debate earns praise for its relative civility and for tackling topics ignored in previous debates, including immigration. Restricting immigration has been a major feature of Trump's presidency, with his promise to build a wall on the Mexico border, plus reducing U.S. intake of refugees and the forced separation of immigrants' families detained along the U.S.-Mexico border. A court filing revealed this week that researchers have been unable to track down the parents of 545 of those children. The candidates sparred over the controversial policy.
Let's talk about what we're talking about.
What happened? Parents were ripped, their kids were ripped from their arms and separated. And now they cannot find over 500 of sets of those parents, and those kids are alone. Nowhere to go. It's criminal. It's criminal.
Let me ask
Kristen,
you about
Kristen, I will say this. They went down.
Seconds,
we brought reporters, everything. They are so well taken care of. They're in facilities that were so clean.
But some of them haven't been reunited
good,
with
But just
their
ask one question. Who built the cages?
The two men also went back and forth over racism. Trump has claimed he has done more for black people in America than any U.S. president besides President Abraham Lincoln, who freed black slaves in the U.S. over 150 years ago.
I am the least racist person. I can't even see the audience because it's so dark, but I don't care who's in the audience. I'm the least racist person in this room.
Abraham Lincoln here is one of the most racist presidents we've had in modern history. He pours fuel on every single racist fire, every single one. Started off his campaign coming down the escalator saying he's going to get rid of those Mexican rapists. He's banned Muslims because they're Muslims. He has moved around and made everything worse across the board. He says to the, about the poor boys, last time we were on stage here, he said, I told them to stand down and stand ready. Come on, this guy is a dog whistle about as big as a foghorn.
You have done nothing other than the crime bill, which put tens of thousands of black men, mostly, in jail.
All right, let me ask Vice President Biden, because if you look at what's happening with the voting right now, they remember that you treated them very, very badly.
Voting in the U.S. election finishes in 11 days. Also in the U.S., a Minnesota judge has dismissed a third-degree murder charge filed against a white former Minneapolis police officer who pressed his knee against black man George Floyd's neck until Floyd died. Derek Chauvin still faces serious charges, including second-degree unintentional homicide. Floyd's death in May sparked protests in Minnesota and beyond, which polls said involved at least 15 million people across the country. International Edition's Lori London spoke to Minneapolis-based criminal defense attorney Jack Rice about the dropped charge and potential renewed protests.
When I first heard that the third-degree charge was dismissed by the court, I was concerned because of the volatility that we have seen already. But if you look at the statute that they applied in that case, a lot of us did scratch our heads wondering why they were charged the third degree in the first place rather than the second. Actually, they originally did charge the third degree, and then they added the second degree. So he's still facing two of the more serious counts regardless, and those are the counts that he's likely to go to trial on.
And has there been any reaction from the former officer himself?
Right now, he's out on bail, $1 million bail, and the judge allowed him out of Minnesota. He's somewhere else.
It would seem like he's still in some very big trouble for this death.
He is. He's charged with second degree unintentional murder. He's also being charged with manslaughter. Essentially, for the more serious second degree charge, they just have to prove that he was committing a felony and that somebody died as a result of it. And so in that sense, and I've had trials like this, this is something that prosecutors have done, know how to do, and can do. So he needs to be concerned about this because he could spend decades in jail just for something like that.
And what about the other officers that were charged that were on scene with him and didn't stop it, but didn't actually have their knee on George Floyd's neck?
They were all charged with aiding and abetting. All of those lawyers tried to get their cases dismissed Thursday, and ultimately the judge rejected those arguments, and they're all facing those charges. Now, what's interesting is all of these different officers are trying to get separate trials, and generally what that means is they're going to start pointing fingers at one another and start saying, it wasn't me, it was that guy, it was Chauvin, it was somebody else, I was the innocent one here. And that's usually the argument you make when you're trying to get separate trials.
this case that sparked enormous protests across not just the U.S., but even around the world over the death of George Floyd.
How concerned are officials there that this could renew some of the demonstrations and violence?
There were a lot of concerns in the community. In fact, what we found was as soon as this order came down, the Hennepin County Attorney's Office, they started boarding up this courthouse within 5 or 10 minutes. I know the same thing is happening, and there's concern in St. Paul as well, the other twin city here, because this really boiled up into the entire community and caused this incredible outrage, and that anger still exists in these cities.
That was Minneapolis-based criminal defense attorney Jack Rice speaking to International Edition's Lori London. This is VOA. The French government's scientific advisor Arnaud Fontanet said Friday that COVID-19 is spreading in France more quickly than during its initial outbreak in the spring, Reuters reports. It's one of the starkest warnings yet about the scale of the disease's resurgence in Europe. Fontanet made the remarks to BFM TV a day after France reported a record of 41,622 daily COVID-19 infections. The country now has more than 1 million cases, according to Johns Hopkins University in the U.S., making it the second Western European country to do so after Spain. In response to the surge, France expanded its curfew yesterday to include more than two-thirds of the population. Like other medical experts, Fontanet said it takes about 2 weeks for containment measures to have some impact. Parisians are expecting much stricter measures, with some even advocating a new general lockdown. The Czech Republic's prime minister has called on his health minister to resign or be fired after he broke strict government restrictions to slow a record surge of coronavirus infections and visited a Prague restaurant. Prime Minister Andrej Babiš said he will meet with the country's president Friday to discuss a possible replacement for Roman Primula. A media report said Primula held a meeting in a restaurant Wednesday night, the AP reports. Photographs show Primula also didn't wear a mandatory face mask. The revelation has shocked the country, where COVID-19 cases have spiked from an average of 33 new cases per 100,000 people 2 weeks ago to 93 cases per 100,000 people this week. Reuters reports the health minister has rejected calls to resign, but said the prime minister had the right to dismiss him. You're listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Jason Patinkin in Washington. The leader and founder of Greece's neo-Nazi Golden Dawn Party has turned himself in after a court ordered him and other senior members of the party to serve more than 13 years in prison for acting as a criminal organization under the guise of a political party. For VOA, journalist Anthi Karasava reports on the rise and fall of one of Europe's most right-wing parties.
It is a historic decision bound to have ramifications for other far-right parties across Europe. However, as a three-member criminal court here ordered the leaders of the far-right Golden Dawn Party to immediately serve out their prison sentences, many of them emerged defiant. Nikos Michaloliakos, the leader of Golden Dawn, emerged from his home vowing to quickly return. We've been vindicated, he shouted. I am proud to be taken to jail for my ideas, and we will be vindicated by history and the Greek people, he said. Michaloliakos and six other leading members of Golden Dawn were former members of the Greek Parliament. One continues to hold a seat in the European Parliament. They were convicted earlier this month and sentenced to more than 13 years in prison for leading a violent, decade-long campaign that targeted anyone who was on the political left and not Greek. Despite their conviction, the defendants battled in court for days, seeking to win some sort of leniency or suspended sentences that would allow them to serve their sentences at home. Even the court's prosecutor recommended the neo-Nazis be kept out of jail on the grounds that they had no prior criminal record. After repeated delays and days of deliberations, the judge, Maria Lepegnotti, ordered the entire leadership to serve out their sentences behind bars, insisting the order take immediate effect. Police have already started rounding up Golden Dawn's leaders. They're all expected to appeal their convictions. After the 5-year trial, prosecution attorneys such as Kostas Papadakis emerged elated, punching the air in victory. This decision is historic, he says, because it debunks the mystique surrounding Golden Dawn. With a symbol similar to a swastika and stiff-arm salutes in praise of Adolf Hitler, Golden Dawn is a neo-Nazi party that emerged from obscurity, gaining surprising prominence during Greece's grim economic crisis. The party went from winning fewer than 20,000 votes in the 2009 general election to more than 7% of the vote and winning 21 parliamentary seats within 3 years. It retained that hold through 2019 with 18 lawmakers in Greece's parliament. No outright fascist party in Europe managed to make such gains in general elections for years. What made Golden Dawn different and potentially more dangerous than all other Nazi groupings in Europe was that in public, many of its members professed respectable politics and community service that put Greeks first. Many of its members helped escort young women, protecting them at night across the country's crime-infested capital. They came to the aid of senior citizens and brought food and clothes to many of those in need, including the tens of thousands of Greeks who had lost their jobs to the financial crisis. But they were also seen as the kind of Nazis read about in history books, all driven by profound racism and an admiration for Adolf Hitler, his extremist rhetoric, the torch-lit flag-waving rallies, the endless recruitment of young men, and the operation of violent hit squads that frequently roam the streets of the country, targeting immigrants, communist trade unionists, gay people, and an anti-fascist rapper. It was this deadly attack in 2013 against Pavlos Fissas that finally forced authorities to crack down on the violent group and to send its leaders to jail. It remains unclear whether the party can and will remain operative. It is also unclear whether the end of Golden Dawn will stamp out far-right extremism and racist attitudes still strong within Greek society. Anthi Karasava for VOA News, Athens, Greece.
A new court's ruling in Poland makes abortion almost completely illegal. Libby Hogan of Reuters reports.
Poland's top court ruled on Thursday that abortion due to fetal defects was unconstitutional, amounting to an almost total ban on the procedure. Thursday's decision erodes one of the last remaining legal grounds for pregnancy termination in the predominantly Catholic country. The procedure will now only be permissible in the case of rape, incest, or a threat to the mother's life. The decision was met with support from pro-life activist Kajar Godek.
Today, Poland is an example for Europe. It's an example for the world. Ladies and gentlemen, we are not stuck in the historical necessity which commands marching to the left and gradually increases the availability to murder people.
But women's rights activists were dismayed by the decision, and students and others in Warsaw protested in the night, chanting and marching in the streets.
I'm here because I think these are my fundamental rights to decide if I want to give birth to a child or not. PIS is taking away our civil rights. The worst part of it is that in case of unwanted pregnancy, we can deal with it somehow, because we have means, we have support, we have family here in Warsaw. But it's about girls in smaller villages who can even lose their lives.
The current party in power, the Nationalist Law and Justice Party, or PIS, embraces conservative values, and curbing abortion has been a long-standing ambition for the party. Opponents say the Constitutional Tribunal may have acted on the party's behalf. While the tribunal is nominally independent, most of its judges have been appointed by PIS. But PIS say they weren't trying to influence the rulings. Many doctors in Poland already exercise their legal right to refuse to terminate pregnancies on religious grounds. Some say they are also pressured into doing so by their superiors. The decision on Thursday further distances Poland from most of Europe, as one of just two EU countries to severely restrict access to abortion.
That was Libby Hogan of Reuters. Street vendors in Thailand's capital Bangkok have earned the nickname CIA for the intelligence that helps them reach protests before the police. Francis McGuire of Reuters has the story.
Meet the CIA, not the world-famous United States Central Intelligence Agency, but a group of Thai street food carts. They've earned the nickname for the intelligence they gather ahead of Thailand's ongoing anti-government street protests, so they can rush to sites to hawk their dishes. The so-called CIA use their cell phones to study announcements by demonstrators who usually announce protest sites at the last minute to confuse police. When they find out the location, they can then quickly reach the site not only ahead of police, but before many protesters themselves. We have to follow the news very closely, this vendor says. The street food hawkers sell everything from fish balls and fried chicken to dim sum and ice cream. And with tens of thousands of demonstrators in attendance, business is booming. This vendor says he makes about $160 to $192 each time. The protests first began in July against Prime Minister Prayut Chan-o-cha, Thailand's former military ruler. Demonstrators want him removed from power, and they also want to curb the powers held by Thailand's king.
That was Francis McGuire of Reuters. That's it for our show today. On behalf of our producer Nadia Taha and our managing editor, Kate Pound Dawson, I'm Jason Patinkin in Washington. Thank you for listening. Stay safe, stay healthy, and have a great evening.
Next, an international public service announcement by the United States government.
Prote Impiranya, the former commander of the Presidential Guard of the Rwandan Army, is wanted for taking part in the 1994 genocide in Rwanda. In April 1994, as violent Rwandan extremists were launching a bloody campaign of ethnic cleansing, Impiranya led the Presidential Guard battalion. He's accused of playing a key role in planning the genocide, including training military groups and distributing weapons. The Presidential Guard, under Impiranya's command, is accused of assassinating Prime Minister Aga Uwilingiyimana and 10 Belgian peacekeepers detailed as her bodyguards. Throughout the genocide, the Presidential Guard was reportedly a major driving force of lawlessness and destruction. For these and other crimes, the International Criminal Tribunal for Rwanda, now known as the International Residual Mechanism for Criminal Tribunals, indicted Impiranya on charges of genocide and war crimes and issued warrants for his arrest. The United States is cooperating with other governments, the United Nations, and the Residual Mechanism to make it harder for Impiranya and others sought for the killing to continue to elude justice. To achieve that end, the U.S. is offering a reward of up to $5 million for information leading to his arrest. If you or anyone you know has information on Prote Impiranya's activities and whereabouts, you can provide it with complete confidentiality. Please visit the nearest U.S. embassy or consulate website to contact the Regional Security Office. Email the U.S. War Crimes Rewards Program at WCRP@state.gov, or contact us via WhatsApp on +1 202 975 5468. You can also visit our Facebook page at www.facebook.com/war crimes rewards program, or follow us on Twitter at www.twitter.com/warcrimesreward for photos of the wanted fugitives. All credible reports will be investigated, and the identity of all informants will be kept confidential.
That was an international public service announcement by the United States government.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
Straight Talk Africa is celebrating its 20th anniversary. Longtime host Shaka Sali talks about his career, the newsmakers he interviewed, and his audience. Be sure to join us on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on